meager beginnings as an adolescent ambulance washer in Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan, to a decade-long legacy of bringing you breaking news before it makes the news, broadcasting live from the studios of Scared Monkeys Radio Network via C-band satellite W3-957, Access Communications Channel 7, and worldwide via digital streaming audio at ScaredMonkeysRadio.com, it's the Dana Pretzer Show. And now, your host, Dana Pretzer.
Okay, good evening, everyone. The scores of the news, you got news for TV on the internet. It's your newspaper, of course, the Drew Peterson, Natalie Holloway, all these high profile cases. Tonight, we've got two guests that are great, knowledgeable about these cases that can come on and give their expert opinion about them. Robin Sachs, recently featured as a legal analyst on Larry King Live, is a deputy district attorney for the County of Los Angeles. She has covered most of the current news stories, including Natalie Holloway, Stacey Peterson, Baby Grace. For over 15 years, she has prosecuted some of the most despicable defendants who have committed the most heinous crimes. Currently, she prosecutes child sexual assault crimes, where she represents the district attorney on the multidisciplinary team. And if you catch bad guys that hurt kids and put them in jail, you're in my good books. Hi, Robin. Welcome to the show.
Hi. How are you?
I'm fine, and it's a pleasure to have you. And not often do we see pundits, if you can use that term, district attorneys in particular that are currently practicing. It's usually former district attorney. You're still out there. You're in the courtroom probably every day.
Right. I'm in the trenches in Los Angeles. I work, I do child sexual assault prosecution daily. And you often don't get to hear the voice of prosecutors. Many times district attorney's offices have policies against allowing their prosecutors to speak publicly.
Yeah, and that was my point. How do you get around with that? Obviously, you're doing good work, and they let you go out and you do the public speaking, because PR is good even on the prosecution side as along with the defense side.
That's right. I prefer to look at it not as PR, but really more of public education and public safety. At what our office, what the Los Angeles County District Attorney's Office likes, is to educate the community, educate the public, and those people end up being potential jurors, so it's always nice to educate them. My office does have a policy, however, that I am not able to comment on any cases that the Los Angeles County District Attorney is handling.
Right, absolutely, and that makes sense. I guess public awareness is what's important here, and when we watch these cable news shows, you've been an analyst on Larry King, and we see them featuring a case or covering a case, a high-profile case like Drew Peterson that you've talked about, for example, or Natalie Holloway. I'm going to ask you to take off your prosecutor's hat. Well, I'm sorry, I'm going to ask you to take off your TV hat, and I'm going to take off my radio hat. And you're going to be the DA. I'm going to be the cop, because we both do that besides what we're doing on the air right now. And we'll look at a case like Drew Peterson, the non-stop coverage. All the cable shows are doing it. All the cable shows are starting to fight a little bit now because of it. Peterson himself has put up a web page trying to solicit funds for his defense. Some cable shows are attacking his lawyer, Brodsky. I'm watching another cable show tonight just before we go on the air, and that cable show is defending Brodsky. As a DA, as a cop, we're investigating a case. We're thinking of potential jury pools. We're looking at potential witnesses. What does this nonstop coverage, these TV hosts that think that they're Dick Tracy going out and trying to solve the case, sensationalizing in some cases, do to you? I know as an officer it would drive me crazy.
Well, it depends what the circumstances are, and it depends how it's being reported, unfortunately. I think that it does, you know, it's kind of a mixed blessing. In some ways, there are leads and tips that you wouldn't get but for the media making a case a headline. So in a lot of ways, there are times that we can thank it. But when it gets so sensationalized as it is now with Drew Peterson, And clearly it's feeding his narcissistic behavior of loving to be in front of the cameras. It may have the potential of backfiring in terms of being able to create a jury pool. I mean, you have an issue of, you know, if they haven't heard, if a potential juror hasn't heard about what's going on in the Drew Peterson case, then what kind of juror is that person going to be? And then the flip side of it is then you end up, you know, dealing with potential change of venue for a future trial, which is inconvenient and problematic for everyone.
Some hosts will say, well, you know, they like to brag, but we're sure that not everyone has heard the coverage. But you're talking newspaper, radio, internet, TV, trucks covering this. Yeah, narcissistic is right. He's a jackass, for lack of a better term. And one of the things that drives me around the bend is in his time as a police officer, he obtained the rank of sergeant. That's a non-commissioned rank. Once he leaves the police service, he's no longer a sergeant. He could be called former sergeant or whatever. But what drives me nuts is the emphasis on sergeant. Is that to sensationalize this even more because he's an ex-cop?
We can. I mean, I don't know how many people are really aware of the different ranks of police officers. I think the second that you throw the word police officer into the mix, it gets the media hype going. I don't know if, you know, I think maybe it helps sensationalize it a bit. It makes it him seem even that much more important and that much more surprising and makes it that much more sensational of a story. I don't know that it really, in the end, changes anything, though.
I don't think there's a jurisdiction that has covered and been involved in more high-profile law enforcement trials in Los Angeles County. I know you lecture at the police academies. You work with police officers, investigators, detectives all the time. But what do these types of high-profile cases, and we're going to get into the incompetence in the Holloway investigation here in a minute, this Peterson case, and actually there's been a lot of cases involving police officers and domestic trouble here lately. What does that do to the morale of those that are maybe thinking of joining police services that are there now because they're underpaid, they're getting trashed in the media every time you turn around? My point is, I've got 25 years in and I'm a sergeant. I go out and I do my job, and I think most people realize that police do good work. There's the odd bad one, but does this TV coverage help or hurt that?
Well, I think that we have a phenomenally low number of people joining the academy and a variety of police academies in general.
Right.
Just generally speaking, I think this, you know, the media outlook on police officers in the negative light certainly doesn't help, but I think the qualifications have increased for police officers. There's more requirements for college graduates and college degrees and so forth. And the pay hasn't increased with the increase of expectations. So I think that has deterred a lot of people from entering the academy to begin with. But I think that the people that are willing to go into the academy despite the bad outlook are the people who are out there really committed to doing justice and doing the right thing and really want to put the bad people away and not catch the good people.
Absolutely. If you're just tuning in, Robin Sachs is here. She's a deputy DA for the County of Los Angeles. Just focusing in a little bit more on law enforcement in this Peterson case. You know, the search goes on, the lawyers, the pundits, so everything that we see on TV, and I have seen your work that you've done with Larry King, and you're excellent at it. The fellow that I see on your webpage, by the way, if you're interested in Robin's webpage, it's Robin Sachs, SaxsSax.com. Mark Garagos is probably one of the finest attorneys out there and one of the better commentators or pundits, as they call them. But a lot that you see, and I'm not going to name the network that I was watching tonight, a lot of these defense lawyers, I'm going to use the term, this is my term, not yours, so you can get mad at me if you're listening and you don't like what I'm saying, come out of the woodwork when it comes to these types of high-profile cases. And the show hosts seem to go to them like they're the so-called expert on something. You have an expertise, the type of cases that you prosecute right now, but are lawyers. We've talked about policemen. Are lawyers hurting themselves, Joel Brodsky, for example, by coming on these shows and making a fool of themselves in some cases?
Well, it's so interesting. I was around and addicted to the Spectre trial in Los Angeles, and I'm not going to talk about the facts of the case,
right,
but in terms of just watching the court TV tent that was set up, I saw people getting out of their cars at the criminal courts building and walking over and saying, hey, can I, you know, get on the air? And if they had a nice suit, they ended up on the air.
Wow.
And every almost 90% of the defense bar ended up as a commentator that is in Los Angeles based on just showing up to court on the right day looking like they would look well on television, not speaking for their expertise. I think the bad habit that happens in terms of the defense bar is any publicity is considered good publicity.
Right.
So it doesn't matter what you're saying. As long as your face is out there and your name is out there, you know, and as long as someone can Google you and say that you've appeared on something, then there is a added credibility that's already added. For a prosecutor, we're held to such a higher standard, which is why I think a lot of prosecutors stay away from commentating to begin with, because not only do we represent our personal opinions, but whether we like it or not, and whether any particular agency likes it or not, we are representing our office, and we have a much greater duty in terms of ensuring justice. If, you know, I represent the people of the state of California, that includes the victims, that includes the defendant, that includes the defendant's family, and I have to you know, hold honor to that role. And in order to do that, I need to know what I'm talking about. And I don't think that because defense attorneys don't have that same necessity, they get away with shoddy advice.
Yeah, and it's the perceived bias that is out there in the media, especially if you're a law enforcement or a prosecutor, that, you know, you're trying to railroad this guy, you've planted evidence on that guy, all sorts of things. How difficult is it, and I don't want you to speak on specific cases, to prosecute a police officer? Because as a prosecutor, besides the work that you do, that's got to be one of the more difficult cases to actually prosecute.
Oh, there are whole units at many offices. I know in Los Angeles there's special units that deal just with prosecution of police officers, and they're very, very difficult cases because, first of all, you have usually an agency and a group of witnesses that are also police officers that are, you know, fall in support of, you know, a police officer, and there's all sorts of kind of mixed history, and there's all kinds of complications in terms of what's considered good, what's considered bad, what's considered ethical, what passes the line for illegal in terms of some of the police conduct. It's an easy call if it's a police officer who's molested someone or a police officer who, you know, robbed someone, but a police officer who does something unethical that's while within the course of duty, and it has to do, you know, violence or, you know, use of weapons or any sort of use of force, that's where it gets really harried.
Yeah, I'll bet it does. Yeah, Natalie Holloway, prosecution comes out here in the last month or two. Hans Moss, who I have invited on my program, and he has decided not to come on, came out in the public. Again, you can't find a bigger, more high-profile case, an international high-profile case, than the disappearance of Alabama teenager Natalie Holloway, comes out and says that there is new evidence. He's bringing it back to the courts. Arrests are made again, and I've coined the term on my program many times. It's like a bad fishing show. There's arrest and release, and this prosecutor Moss basically made himself look like a fool in the media, in my opinion. And this case has just gone more south, and it just stinks a high heaven. I know you've covered it. You've talked about it. What are your thoughts?
I hate this. I hate the arrest and release.
Yeah.
It wreaks havoc on the integrity of prosecutors. That coming off the heels of the Dufong case,
right?
It shades a color on all prosecutors, and it's really unfortunate. I believed when I heard that there was new evidence that there was new evidence.
I did too.
So it's particularly troubling when an officer of the court, a prosecutor, as I said, one who upholds themselves as the righteous administrator of justice, comes out and says something, turns out that it's not so, keeps someone in for an additional 8 days, and then finds that nothing's there. That will never look good on the case. And if there was ever another arrest, which I doubt there will be, based on what I've heard, unless there's new suspects, it will be always casted in a negative light.
Was this prosecutor starstruck? Was he trying to do damage control for Aruba? I realize it's speculation wholly on your part. Or what was it? Because the family, and I've interviewed both Dave Holloway and Beth on my program many times, and I've seen them so strong yet so upset because they get disappointed. There's more pendulum swings and as far as emotions go than anything. What was his reason, this prosecutor? You're like me, you're still scratching your head.
I am scratching my head. If I were to try to think of a reason, there are two possible reasons. One is, and this would be my hope, was that there was some sort of ruse by the prosecutor hoping to maybe have this be a shakedown for information, where we say we've got it, and then there becomes an admission as a result of a shakedown, maybe as an investigative technique, although I don't think that this prosecutor was quite as calculated as that, although I would like that. And the other reason, which is another reason, and it happens often in cases where you have vigilant victims and victims' families who are involved and dedicated to the resolution of the case, is that there may have been pressure, and that internal pressure sometimes, fortunately, takes over the rational part of someone's brain, and the prosecutor's brain maybe in this case, and felt like, okay, well, maybe we have some slight, tiny little thing that can turn into evidence, and wanted to have the appearance that they were doing something and that they weren't just letting it go. But not a good way to handle a case.
Well, the criminal justice system on that island is just... well, it's beyond comprehension, this 8 days and 16 days and release and then evidence and not. All we can hope for is that the family someday gets answers. Everything we learned about parenting, we learned in court. You're the author of that. And if we can't do things to help our children, I don't know what we can do. Let's talk about the book.
Well, this book is a prosecutor's view of parenting. I, myself, and my co-author, Harry Caldwell, were both. He's a former prosecutor, and we both as parents find that there's a little bit of an occupational hazard in terms of having the job that we have and having children, but it's not only a hazard, it's an occupational benefit.
Yeah.
I think that my children, I have a 5-year-old, a 14-year-old, and a 17-year-old, and they can't get away with anything, and I can't let myself get away with anything because I
absolutely
constantly have the prosecutor hat on me.
Absolutely. My father, law enforcement for 38 years, myself, law enforcement for 25 years. I have 4 kids. And growing up as the child of a police officer, as the child of a prosecutor, there may be times where we complain a little, saying, oh, you're too hard on us, you're controlling us, that sort of stuff. But in the long run, it's probably one of the best experiences I had as a child, and I'm sure your kids think the same way. But with all this craziness in the world today, the internet, predators online, mall shootings, God, it's so depressing as soon as you turn on the TV to see what's gone on today. It's, when I go to do the show, it's very easy to pick a topic because sadly there's so many of them out there. What can we tell parents? What can we tell people that maybe haven't woke up to reality to see that it's a different world today than it was when you and I grew up?
Well, I think the first thing that we need to look at is it's not the internet, it's not guns, it's not all that stuff. I mean, those are facilitators in terms of the safety of children.
Right.
We have to look at knowledge is power. We have an ability now to really become knowledgeable based on things like the internet and the media and so forth, to really learn and know what our kids are doing. And if we want to stick our head in the sand, then the kids and parents will unfortunately suffer the consequences. But if we use the same tools that our children are out there using to learn about what's going on in their world, to learn about what's going on in the outside world, and use it as a safety mechanism, you can turn the same thing that could be a source of fear and danger into a source of safety and comfort.
You know, we've talked many times on this program, and as a first-time guest, I'm curious on your perspective of this. Mark Lunsford has guested with me before. We've talked about mandatory minimum sentences, Wendy Murphy, you name it. I'm looking at a story here from Hamilton, Montana, and a Missoula man on Tuesday was sentenced to 225 years in prison for three felony counts of indecent exposure, 75 years on each count. Obviously, a judge who I'm going to talk about a little bit later on in my program that we shouldn't complain about. But when we see those types of sentences, 225 years for these types of cases, you know, the cop in me says, yeah, the parent in me says, fantastic. But I'm sure this judge, sadly, will be criticized for this. What's your thoughts?
Well, I think that what we need to keep in mind when we look at sentences and we hear these reports of what's happening in courtrooms, you're only hearing about the sentencing on the last case.
Right.
When we sentence, we're looking at a person's entire criminal conduct over the course of their entire life. So, yes, it may seem particularly harsh for a 225-year sentence on what would be indecent exposure, but I'm feel pretty confident that based on those numbers and the ability to even get to those numbers is that there is a lengthy criminal rap sheet that those last crimes were just the tip of the iceberg, last kind of straw type things. And I hate to use cliches, but that's really where it seems to be. And really, this person is probably being penalized for what's been years and years of conduct that led him there.
Yeah, absolutely. There's more to the story, and again, I'll talk about that later on this evening. But it's nice to see a judge that comes out with sentencing like that. And we've been critical on certain judges, and obviously, as an officer of the court, I don't want you to respond to that. But there is a perception, just like with police officers, just like with prosecutors, defense attorneys, that the judges are more and more in the spotlight today than they ever were. And maybe if I could get a quick comment from you. Do you see that true?
I do. I think that there's the personality of judges. I mean, if, again, I look at the Spectre trial just from the outside, Judge Fidler became his own personality. The judges in a Nicole Smith case, that judge had his own personality. There are all these personalities that
went
into the decision making, and they're all kind of players in the system, and everybody has a role. So I think there's a fascination as to what personality is behind each of these roles.
Did he ever get his talk show or his judge's show, the one from the Anna Nicole case?
I don't know, actually. I would imagine so.
Yeah, wasn't he something else? You know, I've spent some time in court, too. Obviously, not as much as you have, but to see a judge like that, it makes you wonder. What's next for you, Robin?
What next for me is just prosecuting the bad guys and keeping the child molesters off the street and keeping our kids safe.
And you know what? You're doing a kick-butt job at that. But here's a little something that I worry about, and I see in police officers, and I see in prosecutors, and maybe even with defense attorneys, that when we're doing this, it's a tough job, okay? You're seeing and reading and hearing about things that most people should never have to hear about in their lives, and you're doing what you can do to try and get these people off the streets. But is there a mechanism for prosecutors that do the kind of work that you do, so if you're having a problem, you can talk to somebody about it?
Well, where I work, I kind of laugh that I get pre-therapy all the time. I work out of a multidisciplinary team, and the therapists, there's therapists and advocates that are stationed here really to deal with the trauma that the children are suffering as a result of being sexually abused. But it never hurts to have a staff of therapists that can help debrief after an interview or after a pretty traumatic case. And I do a really good job of separating, and you know, I walk out of here, and when I walk out of my office, it's the end of the day, and you just have to know that one case at a time, you're doing a good thing, and that's what makes me get through it.
That's what I say too. I take my police suit off and put my human being suit back on. Robin Sachs, Deputy District Attorney for the County of Los Angeles, thank you. You're welcome on my program anytime.
Thank you so much.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And we'll be right back with criminal profiler Pat Brown. And her website is patbrownprofiling.com. And we're going to talk about the recent mall shootings and all this craziness that's going on. But she's also written a very interesting article. Gore and slasher films are no laughing matter to victims of violent crime. How important is that? I think it's really important. And we'll be back in just a minute here on Scared Monkeys Radio.
It's the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. And now back to the show.
And we're back. Pat Brown from the Pat Brown Criminal Profiling Agency is here tonight. Hi, Pat.
Hey, Dana.
And, of course, her website is www.patbrownprofiling.com or www.sheprofilers.com. Now, I brought you on tonight because I want to talk a little bit about this mall shooting, and now we've had a church shooting in Colorado. The other one was in Nebraska. And, of course, you've got an interesting article that you've written about gore and slasher films. And you know, when it comes down to this, the influence on these people to go out and do this sort of stuff, I think we can tie this all in together. A 19-year-old, depressed, all that sort of stuff, goes into the mall and starts shooting, ends up taking his own life. Again, in the church scenario, either the security guard took out the shooter or the shooter took out himself. Doesn't matter. But this is something that sadly we're seeing too much of on TV. In fact, like you and I were just talking about, every time that we come on the air, somebody else has been shooting somebody else, and it just seems to never stop.
It is, and it's getting a lot worse. And I see a lot of times some of the analysts will come out and say, oh, no, it's nothing worse than it used to be, it's just more media. But I don't buy that. I do think it's getting a lot worse. I think that comment the other day, we stopped worrying about terrorism from overseas. After 9/11, we haven't been attacked by anybody in the last 6 years from overseas, but our own children are killing us off.
Exactly. We're getting attacked by our own people, and it's...
Exactly. We need to pay attention to that. I mean, what kind of society do we live in where you can't go down to the store and have, you know, go shopping without being shot, or your children can't get off a school bus without being shot, or you can't go to college without being shot? It's insane.
You know,
there's one thing if you're in a gang and, you know, your kids have descended into a gang, and there's another gang fight, and it's between the two, of, you know, just one gang and the other, kind of like if you're going to get into crime or, you know, live by the sword or die by the sword. But to be totally innocent and get shot down for no reason, this is a scary trend.
And I've been contacted and have interviewed both sides of the gun control issue, saying that if guns were banned and controlled more, they wouldn't have got the guns. And then the other side saying, well, thank heavens for the security guard that was packing two guns, yes, because she took the shooter out. That's not what we're going to talk about. I want to talk about the profile or this type of personality that we've seen, and we see more, and I agree with you completely. It's not just the media. It seems like you know, we're just harming ourselves more and more. What's going on?
Well, I think that we have a lot of failures in the family and community to provide a decent life for children. I really believe this. I don't think children are growing up cared for as much as they used to be. I think they're being ignored. I think they're being left to their own devices. And I think parents are simply not paying attention to what is going into their children's minds. And, you know, it's a funny thing to me because you'll pay a fortune for advertising on the Super Bowl and say, well, that makes sense. You know, 30 seconds of the Super Bowl, if you want to sell a pair of tennis shoes, you'll pay $1 million.
Yeah.
But you can have your children intaking tons of very detrimental information, and you think it has no effect on them. That makes no sense. Yeah, if one works, it should work the other way around with your children as well. And if we send our children to school, one of the things we're trying to do with that, of course, is we want our children to have 6 hours a day of great schooling. We want them to learn wonderful things, and we want it to stick in their brains. And if the school itself taught our children nothing but negativity, if they just sat there and played violent videos all day long and listened to death metal music and watched slasher and gore films, you know, and then they, you know, we would be up in arms and saying, my God, what are you teaching our children?
You know,
instead, when our children come home from school, what are they doing? They're doing that for 6 hours in our own home. Are we parenting or are we not parenting?
Well, you know, when I grew up, I grew up in the, I'm dating myself here, but in the Leave It to Beaver era, and my three sons, and I've interviewed Chip from my three sons, and we've talked about TV then compared to TV and video today. We have satellite, we have the internet, we have everything possible out there. There's just some gory, sick garbage that's out there, and you've written this article that you've come under attack for, and you've been praised for. Let's talk about that.
Well, this article is really set up a firestorm. As a matter of fact, somebody just hacked into the Wikipedia site and changed the information.
Oh, geez.
Kind of me. So I'm under a lot of fire for this, and mostly from people who are very supportive of the gore culture and the slasher culture, saying this is just unfair, that, you know, all these things are just wonderful and fine. They don't like it when anybody says that this stuff is negative, and yet they themselves will say, let me explain what the article is about. I was on a blog for top crime professionals and top true crime authors, run by Corey Mitchell, who is a true crime author himself, and I'm not going to say his books aren't a decent read, they are. But on Thanksgiving Day, he posted a slasher video. It was Eli Roth's slasher video from Grindhouse as a Thanksgiving treat. Well,
jeez.
Some of us went there and thought it wasn't such a treat. It was a very vile, misogynist, horrible piece of work. And a lot of us are representing victims. And we were horrified, and we asked him to remove it. We said we were horrified, and he said we had no sense of humor. And so five women left the blog because we were so offended by this, and he would not take it down. Then when he heard I was going public, he took the video down, and he issued an apology when he knew the story was coming out. But by that time, you know, obviously it had nothing to do with truly feeling sorry about it. But this man said he represented the victims.
Right.
And he'd spoken at Parents of Murdered Children. Well, I contacted all the victims' organizations, and they were all horrified because all the victims' organizations will say slasher and gore films are contributing to the violence in our society and contributing to rape and horrible violent actions against women. And we just think this is just, you know, horrific action, and it should never be, you know, nobody should be producing. He produces gore films as well. So this man produces gore films, and yet he said he represents victims. This is insane. And so this whole thing became a big issue, and my point is that we are having these mall shootings. We are having these young people who are so disaffected. They live in a culture of death. They think of themselves as vampires. They hate the living, and they spend all their time immersed in just absolute violence and gore, thinking all this stuff is absolutely cool because they hate life. And that's what's happened. They've gotten to the point of being, you know, even at 10, 9 and 10 years old, they're accessing this. Like you say, they're not getting anything good going into the brains on television and the internet now. It's just constant negativity, and they're growing up on the stuff left to their own devices, and they're immersing themselves. And anybody who's got a little bit of a psychopathic bent and is depressed, they're going to eat this stuff up, and eventually they just say, see, the world is as horrible as I think it is, and they go out there, and some of these kids go out there and murder.
It's so simple.
I mean, an epidemic.
It's so simple because they're so easily influenced to go on the net and just use Google, for example, or to, you know, if you have a cable system with digital cable or a satellite system and your parents haven't blocked out some of these channels, it just makes the hair on the back of your neck stand up to see some of the garbage that's out there. And how this person can say you have no sense of humor is totally...
I thought it was like, you've got to be kidding. Well, Corey Mitchell actually says that watching slasher films and gore films is cathartic. And I'm like, okay, you do have a problem if you think this is cathartic. I mean, and you know, I could understand that, you know, if there's a little bit of a violence in a film, you know, I'm not a total prude here. You know, once in a while, right, you have a good story and it's got a little bit of violence and it's acceptable within the story. And you see it once in a while. Remember when the days when people used to, you know, go to the movies?
Right.
So you saw, maybe you went to a mystery and then you went to a comedy and then, you know, once out of three, you know, three or four or five movies, you might see a little bit of violence. But these are kids who are sitting on the internet. They're going to YouTube, and you can now let's say the Eli Roth slasher video is on YouTube, as is Last House on the Left, as is Texas Chainsaw Massacre. These are just right there on YouTube. So now kids can sit home and access slasher movies on the internet. It's insane. And, you know, if we can't get it off the internet, at least I'm trying to get through to parents. You are the parents of these children, and you should not be allowing any of this stuff into your children's heads. You should be watching your children and monitoring what they do. And if you can't control them, I mean, if you can't control the use of the internet and the control the music that comes into the house, you're not parenting.
Well, and the glorification of some of the, in some cases, the true life, the Hannibals, the Charles Mansons, etc. They put these guys on a pedestal. There's a lot of sick, twisted individuals out there that idolize these types of psychopaths.
Absolutely. We have serial killer groupies, and there are tons of sites just dedicated to serial killers. And it's not like they're saying, look at the horrible thing the serial killer does. It's, they actually say, look at what horrible thing this serial killer did. Cool, man.
Yeah.
That's the problem. It's not a sense of horror that they're actually expressing. They're not empathizing with the victim. They're living vicariously through the serial killer. And that to me is just it just boggles my mind that this stuff is allowed. It would be one thing if these were just adults accessing it, but unfortunately, it's getting to the children of America, and we're seeing a huge downturn in their attitude toward humanity.
Pat Brown, criminal profiler Pat Brown, is here this evening. Where are we failing? Is this a parental responsibility? Are we not teaching right in the schools? Is it become more of a freedom of speech issue now, where if we did try to attack something like that, they claim the freedom of speech mantra?
That got thrown in. The freedom of speech got thrown in. I mean, I said, you know, it's one thing to have freedom of speech, another thing to have a sense of decency.
Exactly.
And a sense of empathy. And that we are truly lacking. Yes, I think there's a lot of fault to go around a lot of places. I mean, I think the schools are failing our children. I think they're allowing incredibly bad behavior in the schools, which should be unacceptable. If you're going to go to school, you're going there to learn. You're not going there to wear trench coats.
Yeah, exactly.
That's ridiculous. And at home, I'm sorry, but, you know, everything, especially when your children are younger, why is your child bringing death metal music into the house? Why is your child accessing the stuff on the internet? Why do you even have it? You don't even have to have internet in your home. And if you do have internet, you can have it only on specific times when you're sitting there with your child if necessary, so they don't access it. I mean, they are your children. You are the adults. I mean, I used to tell my children they never had the right to turn on the television without my permission. And they had to come to me and tell me there was a good show on that they really wanted to see. And it was quite funny. Sometimes they'd come and say, oh, Mom, you know, I hear that the BBC is putting on a fine show called Sherlock Holmes. And I'm like, okay, that one sounds pretty good. I guess we can watch that one. And they used to work on these plans to get them, you know, get me to allow the television watching. And we did not have the internet at that time. And my kids did not have violent video games. They just didn't. And some people could say I was cruel and inhumane parent. I did homeschool my children because I didn't think the public school system was up to schooling. And I have three, I think, pretty nice adult children today, and two of them in law enforcement. So I'm not dissatisfied with how it's gone.
Well, you did a good job, and I may be dating myself here a little bit, but I can remember wanting to watch the horror movie Hush Hush Sweet Charlotte. And I don't know if you remember that one. That's an old black and white one where the hand was crawling around.
Famous?
Yeah. And that was something else. But now we've got garbage. Halloween is probably one of the worst times of year. I hate it, to be quite honest with you. You know, my wife would look at me saying, oh, you're such a mean guy. But being in law enforcement myself and seeing the garbage that's out there at Halloween time and having individuals like Eli Roth walking the earth, it's a big problem. Let's talk about Halloween and the influence.
Well, you know, I think Halloween and the Republic at one time was a much more. I mean, I never liked the concept of Halloween when I was growing up. My parents didn't approve of it. It wasn't so much the costume. They just thought, what kind of holiday is it where you go to strangers' home and beg food off of them?
Exactly.
They just thought that was wrong, so we never did it. And then that time, I think people just wore kind of silly outfits. You know, they wore a little silly witch outfit. They wore a little silly skeleton outfit, and it was silly.
Right.
But now we do see that the children are now emulating stuff that's very dark and very gruesome. And I just never seen the appeal of it, especially today. I just think it's pretty, just again, another depressing moment. I mean, when my kids were growing up, what I did was I had fairy tale houses every year. We did a different fairy tale when the children were young, and we invited all the children in the neighborhood in, and we had like 300 people come to the house and go through the whole fairy tale house until I couldn't figure out any more fairy tales and ran out of them. I gave up. But we had a great time decorating the house and doing that, and that was our way of getting around the holiday. But I just think that, you know, as parents, we're supposed to be bringing joy into our children's lives. We're supposed to be showing them happiness. We're supposed to be showing them how the world is beautiful. I don't see why we would want to introduce to our children the ugliness of the world and make them see nothing but evil and nasty and rotten things. I mean, what is that? Why would you serve your children? You know, so I guess like serving your children poison for dinner. Would you do that? Probably not. But yet we serve them poison for their minds. I just don't get what's wrong with parents. Why they're completely neglecting their children and not, you know, living up to their duty. To have a child and you say you love the child, well, take care of the child and make that child a happy person, not a 15-year-old who's thinking about, you know, stabbing you in the night.
Right.
You know, that's a kind of concerning thing when your children go down that road.
Absolutely. And, you know, turning on the television, going to the movies, it's hard to find a movie that you want to go to nowadays because there's the entertainment industry has made the message films, the atheist type films that are out there right now, the gore and slasher films, like we say, the anti-war or pro-war movies. It's hard to find just a good old-fashioned family movie anymore, or television. You spend a lot of time on television, Pat. You know, we've got the Peterson case, Holloway, all these cases that are nonstop coverage on TV. We're hearing positive things. We're hearing negative things, families being trashed, speculation. If it bleeds, it leads. All sorts of crazy stuff, nonstop, whatever. The entertainment industry and television in news coverage, in some cases, are they not failing us big time?
Well, I do think so, in the sense that it's probably way overdone. I don't think they get to the issues. That's one of the things that I try very hard whenever I do television, is to get to the issues as to why. When we talked about, for example, the Colorado shootings, I said, okay, let's take a look at this. I said, first of all, the only reason that this, the one great thing that came out of this was this man was stopped.
Right.
He was stopped quickly by an armed citizen, as it should have been. It told all the future mass murderers out there, you know, if you think you're going to get your day in the sun, maybe you'll just be taken down before you have the chance. That's one way to stop these guys, is to be sure that we can fight back against them. We can finally take a stand instead of just standing around and letting them kill us. Secondly, as far as where these kids get their weapons from, a lot of them, I've always pushed for a law that would require people, when they own their weapons, to be responsible for them. So if you are a parent who owns guns, they should be in a lockbox, they should be on your person. And if you're going to leave them lying around the house for your children to arm themselves with and go shoot up the mall, you ought to be going down as a suspect for murder. We want to see some people lock up their weapons who aren't going to take care of them. That would help out a lot. But it wouldn't mean you can't, you know, as a citizen, you don't have the right to defend yourself with a weapon. And thirdly, I said, we got to wonder why we're creating these guys. You know, why do we have these mass murderers out there? We have to actually look at it and not just go, ooh, isn't he creepy? I know, yes, he's creepy. Why? And what are we doing about it? So if news were for education, it would be helpful. But a lot of times it is just for, you know, let's ooh and ah over what has happened. And I don't think that's helpful. So I think we need a lot more people speaking up when they're doing the news to get the information out as to what we should be doing about it. We should, instead of just sitting on our hands and doing nothing.
When we
see this stuff go, we'll hear about one crime after the other, like for 2 years straight, and yet nothing ever changes.
Yeah, absolutely. When we see the stories, let's talk about Drew Peterson a little bit while I've got you here. That merry-go-round of media coverage, both Drew Peterson, who loves the media, his lawyer now, this Brodsky, who loves the media who are fighting amongst themselves now because of Joel Brodsky and Drew Peterson's love for one group and not the other group. And it's becoming absolutely sickening. The focus is that there's still one unexplained death and one missing mother that we're not hearing about, yet we're hearing about all this other crazy stuff. What's going on? Is the media covering this stuff good enough, or is it just simply if it bleeds, it leads?
Well, I do think that, you know, ratings obviously are probably the biggest issue.
Yeah.
I think that news is not put out there as an educational tool, as it did in the past. I think when we had so few channels. I've always kind of approved of the you know, once a time news time, you know, so you really had to just state the news.
Yep.
Very clearly, because you only had so much time to do it in. I've loved the weekly newspaper. And so sometimes we see the same thing, newspaper stuff that's unnecessary in the newspapers. It would be nice when you just had, you know, one newspaper comes out once a week. What's the important stuff? Put it in there, and instead of having too much space to fill. And I think that's what the problem is. I think it's 24 hours a day, too many stations, too much advertising. So there's so much time to fill, and there's so much competition. There's no way for these networks, I think, to get back to the point of what is news about.
And they,
how are they going to go there?
Yeah, and you're right. They need to cover that 24/7 mantra. And I know they do a lot of reruns and things like that. But
right. I think within that whole, if the networks can do their best to have some usefulness to it, at least that, you know, that helps out. Whether the people watching want to hear actual information, I don't know. You know, so sometimes it depends on the viewers as well, because I've always thought that way was very true with drug abuse. I'm personally not one to go for the guy at the top so much, because I think you're wasting a tremendous amount of time trying to get something you can't get. I say stop the market.
Right, yeah.
Because every time somebody walks out there and buys crack on the street or buys cocaine on the street, they're contributing to the market. I think the same with prostitutions. Don't just worry about the prostitutes. Get the Johns. Put them in jail, and, you know, pick up that guy and put him in jail. And when you see the businessman go to jail for 6 months, you're going to have empty streets. So, to me, it's kind of that way. What are the viewers looking at? What do they want? If they want reality TV, which they apparently do, tremendous amounts of junk reality TV, they're not looking for fine shows. They're not looking for a good musical. They're not looking for Leave It to Beaver. They're looking for Jackass and The Real. I can't remember that. I don't even know the name of these shows.
I know what you mean.
I don't watch any of it, so I don't even know the names of all these reality TV shows. They're just so stupid.
Well, you know what? Speaking of
being mean to each other.
Speaking of jackasses, let's talk about Drew Peterson and Joran van der Sloot, two of the biggest narcissistic personalities that I've seen in a long time, who have had total media coverage, who have been able to be suspected of something but have never been able to be taken before the courts. And maybe not so much van der Sloot, but Peterson basically playing up to the media the most that he can. Let's talk about the similarities and the differences on those two guys that we've seen a lot of lately.
Well, both of those guys are pretty much flaunting themselves because they believe that the physical evidence doesn't exist to get them convicted. I mean, these days, our convictions are getting harder and harder to get.
Right.
You have to have a tremendous amount of physical evidence. I don't know if you're familiar with the Picton trial up in Canada that just closed.
You bet.
The pig farmer?
Yeah, who he fed the prostitutes to the pigs. Yep.
Yes, he did. He was suspected of killing 60 prostitutes. He was, in this particular part of the trial, he was charged with 6 murders. And he got convicted of 6 counts of second-degree murder.
Right.
Now, how in the world can you get second-degree murder for 6 murders? I don't know, when they weren't at the same time. So, I mean, it's like he sort of accidentally killed 6 women at different times. No premeditation there. But a lot of it was said, well, we couldn't prove, there wasn't enough physical evidence. I'm thinking, you know, the body parts are buried all over the farm. I mean, there was just a tremendous amount of evidence. It's insane. But the jury didn't have a videotape of this man killing them.
Right.
And so I think the same thing is true with Drew Peterson and Joran van der Sloot. They both realize that there's an evidence problem. And they think that they can, as long as they can get a good lawyer, that they're not going to get convicted because there's simply not enough absolute perfect evidence out there. You're probably right.
That personality, of course, we see the arrogance, we see the cockiness, but when they're away from the camera, are they having a hard time sleeping at night, or are these guys that honestly think...
I'm sure they sleep like babies at night.
Exactly.
You know, if both of them, I believe, are exhibiting psychopathic traits, and a psychopath doesn't particularly much worry about what anybody else thinks, and since he doesn't care and has no empathy, at night he can sleep perfectly fine, and he's not upset. He doesn't have a conscience. He's not feeling guilty over anything. And even if he did murder somebody, so what? They deserve to die. I mean, this is very similar to the mass murder issue. Serial killers, mass murderers, wife killers, generally speaking, they believe their victims deserve to die. And if you actually think about it, if somebody's overrun with cockroaches in their house and they spray them, how many people go to sleep at night thinking, oh my God, I've killed 200 cockroaches? I feel terrible. Poor little creatures. I don't usually think that.
Right.
Because they have designated those cockroaches as beings that don't deserve to be on the face of the earth. And this is what a psychopath will do with his victims. He will say, well, they're deserving of death anyway, so why should I feel bad about it?
Should we in the media be, you go back to Virginia Tech and all the coverage of the shooter and his ramblings, the Omaha shooting, the suicide note, that being released in the media, is that a pro or a con? Is it helping to prevent these things from happening again, or is it strictly a fear factor message that the networks are wanting to put out? Should they be releasing that, or shouldn't they?
I personally think they should not release it. I think they shouldn't say the man's name. I actually don't, when it comes down to mass murderers, I rarely, unless I forget, I rarely say their name. I just say that guy.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't like to give him any credit. I usually call him a loser because that's what he is. I don't care to call him anything but that. But I think one of the problems with releasing all this information is that we again, it's the ooh and ah factor. That the viewers want to go, oh, ooh, ah, look what he said. It's exciting to them. Yet it's actually the same stuff as written by every one of them. There's nothing new about it. It's not really educational. Sometimes people say, well, we need to learn more. I'm like, we don't need to learn anything more about these mass murderers. They're all the same.
Mm-hmm.
And we even see that with the Colorado shooter, he basically copied the Columbine letter and just replaced a few nouns in it. They're not originals. They're just the same kind of guy over and over and over again. We know enough about mass murders. We know exactly why they developed. Nobody will listen to. You know, we're not listening to the fact that they're developing because we have a society that's failing our young people, and we have disaffected kids growing up who are accessing all this violent underculture of death. And then they're getting hold of guns, usually from their relatives who are leaving them lying around. And we have no defense because we've disarmed our citizens. There we go. That's the whole thing in a nutshell. Now, let's stop the coverage of it. Let's just say, let's just talk about the victims. Let's not mention the guy's name, and let's not talk about him after that. Let's say we're not going to release anything that this guy has put out there because we don't want to talk about him because he's just a crappy loser who with glad isn't around anymore. I would like to see that.
Yeah.
But we have to come to a consensus across all the media that we're going to not do that anymore.
Yeah, I
can't. And we're not going to be that excited by them because they're not people worth paying any attention to. We don't want to go. And when we were doing the Omaha shootings, I got real ticked off because, not in a negative way toward the person who was saying it, because that's the way it's stated, right? That he was an emotionally disturbed youth who lost his job and lost his girlfriend. And wrote a letter that said he didn't want to be a burden.
Yeah.
And I remember going, wait a minute, this is a psychopath who got fired from his job because he's a thief, who lost his girlfriend because he was probably abusive and creepy.
Yep.
And who didn't, and if he says he doesn't want to murder anybody, why is he shooting everybody down, making everybody's life more miserable?
Yep.
So he was just a lying dog.
And I think he said in that letter that he wanted to take a few pieces of blank out with him. Pat Brown from...
That's probably the only piece of truth that he was out there.
Pat Brown, it's always a pleasure having you.
A pleasure to be here, Dan.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye.
That's Pat Brown, Criminal Profiler. That's the show tonight. We're here at ScaredMonkeysRadio.com or the creme de la creme of blogs at ScaredMonkeys.com. Make sure and check out the website for all of my past shows that you can download, podcast, my daily commentaries. You can leave comments and all that sort of stuff. We'll see you again real soon here on Scared Monkeys Radio. Good night.
You've been listening to the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. We invite you to discuss tonight's program with other listeners by joining us at ScaredMonkeysRadio.com, where you'll find program archives, links to tonight's guest websites, and further information regarding tonight's topics. Scared Monkeys Radio is a production of ScaredMonkeys.com. Thanks for listening.